Across the planet last year, according to the nonprofit Global Witness. More than three-quarters of the killings were in Latin America, with over a quarter in Mexico alone. Conflicts over mining were tied to 27 activist deaths worldwide, the most for any sector. In a hopeful sign, killings dropped significantly in Colombia and the Philippines compared to the year prior. Weather in Washington, D.C. right now is 61 degrees and overcast. In New York City, 60 degrees with fair skies. For WPFW in Washington and WBAI New York, I'm Chris Bangert-Drowns. Thanks for listening.
The previous program was Leonard Low Paid at Large, heard Monday through Friday, usually at 1 p.m. here on WBAI New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org online. Stay tuned for a special hour version of Ecologic. It's 2 p.m. Well, it's actually 1 minute past 2 p.m. Stay tuned.
Healthy air and water. Every day is Earth Day. I'm Ken Gale.
I'm Sally Gellert.
And I'm Donna Stein, and this is Ecologic for September 30th, 2022.
When your air or water are clean, thank an environmentalist. If not, become one. Enough said.
What does the human immune system have to do with birds' sense of smell? Nature is amazing.
In today's episode of our Celebration of Nature series, we talk with Danielle Whitaker, author of The Secret Perfume of Birds. Welcome, Danielle.
Hi, and thank you. I'm happy to be here.
So you pioneered this brand new field. Tell us more about it.
Yeah, so I study how birds use their sense of smell to communicate with each other. And before I started doing this research, only a handful of people had ever looked into that, and one of the reasons why is because there is this long-standing myth that birds don't have a sense of smell, which I thought was a really strange idea. I mean, smell is a pretty important sense, and when somebody first said that to me, I thought, why would that even be? So I started doing some research with songbirds to, first of all, test whether they were actually able to smell each other. And then it led to a whole area of research for me, learning to understand how they use their senses of smell and why.
So this field didn't even exist before you took on this research?
I wouldn't say it didn't exist. There were definitely people who came before me. There was some research in the 1950s and 1960s by true pioneers in the field, like Bernice Wenzel, who studied physiology and behavior surrounding birds and their sense of smell. And Betsy Bang, who studied the shape of birds' nostrils inside their beaks. She actually did these wonderful illustrations looking at cross-sections of the structure inside birds' beaks. And then there were a few other behavioral biologists in the 80s, 90s, and early 2000s who were starting to look at this, but primarily in birds like turkey vultures and seabirds. I was one of the first ever biologists to look at songbirds, so small birds like the dark-eyed junco, which is the species that I study.
And the most common bird that you'll see at bird feeders.
Yes, they're extremely common at bird feeders.
Yeah, so anybody who has a bird feeder has probably seen the junco, and that's what Danielle studied. And it was fascinating to see because your research was almost basic. Yeah, you know, I kind of wonder, why didn't anybody think of this before? And I guess it's that long-standing prejudice. I mean, I've been a birder a long time, and I've heard that my entire life.
Yes, we can actually thank John James Audubon for this myth. Began back in the 1830s. It was accepted even then that turkey vultures use their sense of smell to find dead animals. You would see them circling from high up in the air, and it's a long way for an animal to see. And he didn't believe it. He believed that birds were so reliant on vision that there had to be some kind of evolutionary trade-off. And so he did a whole set of experiments that weren't very well planned out, which he believed proved that turkey vultures actually use their sight rather than their sense of smell to find carrion. He did things like stick a dead pig underneath some hedges and wait for them to find it. And you can even read in his notes, if you read between the lines, they were there. They were circling above, and there were dogs attacking the carcass. So, but he concludes that, well, they didn't come down and get the pig, so they obviously couldn't smell it.
Dogs had nothing to do with that, right?
Exactly.
It is amazing. And I mean, you have this book, The Secret Perfume of Birds, and there's a bird on the cover. And yet it seems that there's as much about people in that book as there is about birds. Because, you know, we're all vertebrates. We all have an immune system. We all have a sense of smell. And of course, they say humans can't smell very well either, which turns out not to be quite true. So what in the world does a junco being able to smell whether there's another bird nearby have to do with our immune system and how we choose a mate?
Yeah, that's a great question. So right away from the beginning, I was intrigued by the parallel. I had also heard my whole life that humans didn't have a very good sense of smell compared to other animals. And I've noticed that we don't really think about our sense of smell that much. In fact, the idea that humans don't have a very good sense of smell even goes back to the same time period as the myth about birds. So this is another pretty cool historical study. Paul Broca, who's a brain anatomist, he had discovered an area of the brain called called Broca's area, named for him, and that's a part of the brain that produces speech. But when he was studying brains, he was looking at the shape of the human brain and how our forebrain, where we have our conscious thought, is so much larger than the rest of the brain. And our olfactory bulb, that's the part of the brain that interprets information from your nose, it's where we process smell, is quite small compared to the rest of the brain. And the idea then was that smell was this like animalistic, primitive sense, and that humans had evolved past that. And Paul Broca believed that the forebrain was the seat of free will, and that we had given up our good sense of smell in order to have free will and be thinking creatures and not reacting to these primitive impulses. So the whole time I've been studying the sense of smell in birds, I've been thinking in the back of my mind about how humans use smell too, and how maybe we're actually reacting to smell, things that we smell in our environment, in ways that we're not really processing mentally in the front of our brain. So by setting out to look at, whether birds were using smell and what kinds of information they were communicating to each other, I was also still thinking about how we were probably doing the same thing.
And what did you find?
Well, I found a lot of strong evidence that there's a ton of information present in a bird's their scent. So birds have this one gland located above the base of their tail. It's called the uropygial gland. It produces an oil called preen oil. We call it that because birds spread it over their feathers while they're preening. This oil gives off an odor, and by looking at the composition of that odor and comparing it to the biology of the bird, I found that it communicates information about who they are, how healthy they are, how aggressive they are, whether or not they are capable of producing and a lot of surviving offspring. So it's really useful for another individual, another bird, to sense that, to get that smell. And there's information there for them to process to understand, would this be a good mate? Is this maybe a strong rival competitor that maybe I don't want to mess with because they're super healthy and aggressive? Or is it somebody that I could overpower pretty easily? Maybe they're not in good health. Is this a female that will take care of her offspring? Or maybe she won't be that interested. You know, so there's a lot of information there. Just through reading, I've learned there's a lot of similar information in human scent.
Would that relate to pheromones?
Yeah, so pheromones are kind of a loaded word in science. We'll use them a lot when talking with lay people, because it's a word we're familiar with, the idea that, you know, we give off a scent that can attract you, especially in terms of mate choice or sexual attraction. But the way that biologists define pheromones, those are odors or substances that induce a very specific response in the receiver. So, for example, there's a very well-understood pheromone in rabbits. It's a suckling pheromone. So rabbit mothers will give off this scent that when their offspring, when their baby rabbits smell it, it will induce them to find the mother's nipples and nurse on her. So it's a very specific behavioral response. What we tend to think of when we talk about pheromones, like especially for thinking about the idea of human pheromones, is that it's a sexy scent, right? It's an attractive scent that will draw people to you. But what we see more of, and we understand a little bit better, are these other kinds of scents. So these are chemical signals. We can also think of them as signature mixtures. So if you think about like perfumes, they have these different odors that go into them that create a whole, and you can sense different concentrations of like rose or lemon or lily, I don't know. And you can find those same scents in different mixtures. But the idea here is that we all produce, everybody in the same species produces the same basic set of scents, but we all have our own signature mixture of different amounts of those. And so it's not a pheromone in the sense that it induces a reaction in us, but it's a chemical signal in the sense that we're smelling it, we're getting information, and it's different from every person. So pheromones, on the other hand, they're all exactly the same for everybody. So all those rabbit mothers, they produce the exact same pheromone that their baby bunnies will smell.
You say that the birds know what insects not to eat, like they know not to eat a monarch butterfly. Is that related to the sense of smell as well?
I'm sure it is, yes. There's some good studies looking at how birds might use scent to find food. So, for example, we know that seabirds flying over miles and miles of open ocean can actually detect the presence of fish through the scent given off by clusters of phytoplankton in the ocean. They give off a scent called dimethyl sulfide, and that's where you're going to find fish feeding. So we know that animals, including birds, use scent to find food. There's other examples as well. I'm not sure.
And so do people.
And so do people.
Restaurants open their doors and you'll smell what they're serving.
Yeah, I used to run by a donut shop. I'd always be really attracted. That was like a pheromone right there. But we also know when food's not good, right? So if you've had some old milk in the refrigerator and you open it, you sniff it first to make sure that it's still good, and you'll know right away when it's not. And yeah, other animals, including birds, are able to do the same thing.
And of course, this led you to study bacteria, because they're responsible for these smells in people and birds and everybody.
Yes. This came about as a little bit of a surprise to me, because I've been really hyper-focused on animals and thinking about them as their own entities. And one day I was giving a presentation on my work and talking about what compounds I had identified in these odors. And Kevin Tice, who's a microbiologist, said, those are all known byproducts of microbial metabolism. Have you looked at whether there's bacteria in the gland actually producing these odors? And it just kind of blew me away. I hadn't even given that any thought. Yes, yeah. It's amazing how much you can learn from the people around you.
We had another Celebration of Nature show just on microbes. It's a huge subject.
Yeah,
pardon the pun.
My kids are amazing. Yeah, so I started studying, started looking at bacteria. So we first, looked at whether there were bacteria there. We did a genetic study and found that there were hundreds of species of bacteria that live in Junco glands. And I've learned that there's been a lot of work on this in mammals. So mammalian scent glands are full of bacteria, and those odors that they give off that they use for scent marking are not actually created by the animals themselves. It's given off by bacteria that are symbiotic, that live with them, and they benefit from each other. So the bacteria benefit by being able to consume, the secretions in those scent glands, and the animals benefit by having these odors that they use to communicate with each other. Bacteria are important in all kinds of biological systems. We're most familiar with them in terms of digestion. We know a lot more now about our gut microbiome than we used to. We know how important that is for our health. But we also have bacteria in other body systems. They're important in brain development, in our behavior. They influence how we smell. We just keep learning more and more all the time about these wonderful friends.
Yeah, you have a great quote about bacteria drive animal behavior, including us, such as kissing, grooming, and food sharing. And you have to raise an eyebrow. Kissing? Bacteria make us kiss each other? What's going on here?
Give me some of that bacteria.
So that's from the idea that, these are symbiotic bacteria. We benefit them, they benefit us. And a huge benefit to the bacteria is us spreading them to other people so they can expand, where they live. And there's the idea that we have these kinds of behaviors, things like kissing, that have evolved because it was beneficial to our bacteria for us to pass on our bacteria. And when you think about kissing, it's a little bit of a strange activity, right? You don't see all other animals doing that. Like, why are we putting our mouths on each other? And so this might have been something that evolved over time because it helped both us and our bacteria.
Yeah, there's that song, you get enough germs to catch pneumonia, and now we know you get enough germs to prevent pneumonia.
Yeah, our healthy immune system is really dependent on a healthy microbiome. What we think of as the good bacteria, the ones that help us, they produce antibacterial substances that help fight off pathogenic bacteria. So they really do work in ways that help both us and them.
You mentioned that bacteria was kind of a surprise. You started out not working with birds, right? You started with primates. So tell us a little about that and how you made that switch.
Sure, yeah. I actually went to graduate school in physical anthropology at the City University of New York, and I studied gibbons in Indonesia. And I was really interested in how they chose mates and how they were able to start their own families when they left home. I wasn't able to do much of that because gibbons are actually pretty hard to study, and they're protected species and all of that. So it's switching to birds was a great opportunity.
And Indonesia is where your husband got malaria and you did not.
That's correct.
And he insisted you mention that in the book, so I figured, well, we should probably mention it here on Ecologic.
And you're listening to WBAI New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org.
You know, too often people think about science as dry, but a book with chapters including Following the Bird's Nose, What Does Sexy Smell Like? MHC, Magical Happiness Controller, and Girl Power is clearly written for everyone. We'll send you a copy for your membership donation of just $45. So call 212-209-2950 and ask for The Secret Perfume of Birds.
I just loved reading this book, and I'm sure you will love it too. All the non-scientists will appreciate that Danielle clearly explains all the jargon words. People who are thinking of a career in science will certainly appreciate her procedures, and everyone can relate to how life takes on unexpected paths and opens new horizons. To join us and get your book, go to give2wbai.org or call 212-209-2950. That's 212-209-2950. And of course, we would like you to also become an Ecologic BAI buddy to hear more of this kind of programming that you won't hear elsewhere.
Today, we have for you a special premium with your membership donation of $45 or more. We will send you a copy of Danielle Whitaker's fascinating book, The Secret Perfume of Birds. This is a great book to read and to share with others, a great gift for a budding scientist or a new college graduate. To join us and get your book for a $45 donation or more, go to www.give2wbai.org or call 212-209-2950.
You are hearing today about Danielle Whitaker's book and research, but there is so much we can cover. You'll want to have a copy for yourself to get the rest of the story. Call 212-209-2950 to make a donation and get yourself a copy. Again, call 212-209-2950 or go online to www.give2wbai.org. If you prefer to send a check to WBAI, the address is 2388 Atlantic Avenue, Brooklyn, New York, 11217. It's also on our contact page.
Now, mainstream media is often anti-science, but as you're hearing now, science and basic research is important to our daily lives to keep us healthy and happy. Getting the word out about science is important. We do our best to do that, and we refuse the underwriting or corporate donations that so often compromise mainstream media. WBAI is listener-supported. That's you. Please support Ecologic by pledging $45 to become a member of WBAI and get this book. And I want to add that one of the things that you do when you do a show like Ecologic, there's a lot of research involved. And one of the things of research is, oh, I have to read Danielle's book. What a joy! What a joy! It was wonderful to read. And, of course, I'm thinking about you, the listener, as I'm reading it and how to present it. But you could really open the book at random and just start reading it and find some really cool stuff. So I really can't recommend it more. It was absolutely wonderful. And I'm willing to say this right in front of Danielle because it really was. It's a $45 donation to WBAI, and you get this book, and you're a member of BAI at the same time. And so that's 212-209-2950 or online, www.give2wbai.org. $45 donation, that's it. And what a great book. You'll have hours of fun.
All right. In this critical time for Pacifica and WBAI, we are pleased to offer you this wonderful book to thank you for your support.
This book is such a great combination of the rewards and perils of an alternative academic path, stories of fieldwork, historical anecdotes, and important scientific discoveries. It even has footnotes with personal and humorous comments. Can God create an infinite nose? Eleanor, the poop-eating dog. Please help WBAI and Ecologic stay on the air by pledging $45 to become a member of WBAI and get this book.
Danielle's book is around 300 pages. Well, we can't give you all of it in a one-hour radio show, so you'll want to delve into this for yourself. We'll send you a copy for your membership donation at just $45. So call 212-209-2950 and ask for The Secret Perfume of Birds.
And as we've been saying, you can donate to get The Secret Perfume of Birds or another premium that Ecologic offers, or simply make a donation to tell us that you are out there listening. And please become an Ecologic BAI buddy. Call 212-209-2950. That's 212-209-2950.
In addition to the fascinating book, The Secret Perfume of Birds, yours for a membership donation of just $45, we have many video and audio versions of Ecologic available to you for a donation to WBAI. Go to www.givetowbai.org or ecologic.wbai.org or call 212-209-2950 and say that you want to be a member or a BAI buddy. Buddies are really our sustaining members for just $10 a month. That's less than buying one postage stamp a day. You can help the station ensure that it has funds to meet expenses every week. Just go to www.givetowbai.org or ecologic.wbai.org or call 212-209-2950. Of course, we would love you to become a member in the name of your favorite radio show, Ecologic. So show your love and help us stay on the air. It's a win-win.
And back to more questions for Danielle while we have her here. And now you mentioned COVID and The Secret Perfume of Birds, but not until page 171. I'm wondering why you waited that long to mention it. It's a book that just came out this year.
Yeah, I started writing the book in 2019, and then when the world shut down for most of us in March 2020, it definitely became a much bigger part of my job. That was kind of how I stayed sane, was sitting down to work on this book every day. And, you know, none of us understood really what was going on back then. We didn't know how much it would transform the world and our lives. And I didn't want to, you know, make it all about COVID all of a sudden if it was just going to be a blip. But, you know, as it went on, it became, you know, quite clear that this was going to go on for a long time. It's still going on. And as I was doing more research, as I worked through later chapters of the book, I started to find more and more research about COVID and how important it was in relation to things like odor and the immune system. The loss of smell and taste is a diagnostic for a COVID infection. And I thought that was an interesting link to my work. And so it also made many of us more aware of our sense of smell. You know, I think a lot of us became a little hypochondriacal at the time. And, you know, every time you get a sniffle, it's like, oh, no, do I have COVID? And, you know, you go into the kitchen and sniff the chili powder or whatever to make sure you still had a sense of smell. And then there were some really interesting relationships between COVID and bacteria and smell. One really fun article that I wrote about in the book that I found at the time was people noticing that they smelled different during the pandemic because they were staying home and they weren't interacting with as many people. Yeah. And there was a scientist who had already done a lot of research on bacteria and human odor. And in the article, he assured people that their odor would probably return to normal once they started interacting with the world again when quarantine ended. And I just thought that was so relevant to what I was studying. And so that's when I decided it was time to really start talking about COVID specifically in the book.
So how does this affect our interaction with our own pet birds? People have parrots and parakeets and finches. in their own home. What can they gather from this study?
Oh, that's a good question. I actually have a parrot myself. I have a Quaker parrot, and he smells very nice to me, although he doesn't really let me get that close to him. He turns out he doesn't like me anymore. He's my husband's parrot now. But yeah, every time I've talked to bird owners, they often have observations about how their birds smell. And some have even noticed that the smell of their birds changes when they're sick. And they are really excited to learn that there might be something to that. And I think we can also think about how birds relate to the scents around them in the home. We can think about making scent an important part of a healthy environment for our pet birds and for wild birds as well.
And is there perhaps a plant or something that we can plant outside that our wild birds are going to enjoy to bring them to us? I remember I had this bay window that I sat on the radiator when I was a kid, and there was a big bush in front of it, and I just sat there for hours watching the Cardinals and the Blue Jays, not at the same time, they don't like each other, and just watching the birds just for hours.
Yeah, I don't know of a specific plant that would be great for all birds, but I do know that most of the birds we see in our yards are seed eaters and fruit eaters. So any kinds of plants with berries, for example, would be great. And a variety would be important. I think that's something that a lot of us are learning now about, what's healthier for our lawns and our yards. A monoculture of just grass is not helpful for the birds and insects in our world. So we need variety. We need a diversity of plants. And I think people who have these wonderful yards with lots of different kinds of plants, and you walk by them when you walk in your neighborhood, that's where you're going to see the butterflies and the birds. You're going to see that diversity of animal life where there's a diversity of plant life.
Nice. Yeah, and it's interesting. I was going to say oak trees because my favorite birds are warblers and they love oak trees. But yeah, diversity. And actually, people who sell grass are learning this, because now when you buy grass for your lawn, it often contains like three or four different species of grass. So they have figured that out up to a point, although a lawn that's only grass is still a poor lawn as far as I'm concerned. But I like those flowers and the butterflies that are attracted to them, and certainly there's a lot that they've learned about the microbiome of the soil, and which is better the more diversity there is, and since what's in the soil affects our own health, everything is so connected. Again, diversity of all kinds.
Yeah, that's right. Diversity at all these different levels, at the soil, the plants. And that actually kind of relates to another thing I was thinking about our immune system. We were talking about the gut microbiome earlier. A healthy gut microbiome is a diverse microbiome. You've got to have a lot of different species in there to have a healthy ecosystem inside yourself. And that relates back to our immune system, which also relates in some really interesting ways to smell. So the real reason I started studying smell in birds is that I had been interested in how animals choose their mates. And I was especially thinking about monogamous animals. If you're only going to mate with one other individual and produce all of your offspring with that individual, that's kind of a high risk, right? You want to make sure you get somebody of good quality that's going to stick around and help you if that's something your species does. Not all of them do. And so how do you make this big life-changing choice? And at the time I was thinking about this, there were some new studies coming out about a set of genes called the major histocompatibility complex. That's a lot of words. We call it MHC for short. But these are genes in your immune system that help, control what kinds of bacteria, what kinds of pathogens your body can identify. We have lots and lots of copies of these genes. And the more different kinds of copies we have, the more we're able to detect and fight against different kinds of pathogens. So the idea that had come about was that you would be attracted to somebody who had different MHC genes than your own, so that your kids would be more diverse at these genotypes. And this was something that was studied in humans, too. It's this really cool study. I call it the stinky T-shirt study. It's from the 1990s. Klaus Wedekind had he asked college men to wear plain white T-shirts for 2 days, you know, and they asked them not to smoke and not to drink and not to do things that would affect that, so that the only odor in the T-shirt was their own body odor. And then he gave these T-shirts in plastic bags to women to smell and ask the women to rate their attractiveness. And what he found is that women were attracted to the scent of men who had different MHC genes from their own, which was really exciting when you're thinking about, you know, do humans, are we attracted to each other on the basis of scent? Are we attracted to each other on the basis of things that we're not actually consciously thinking of? And maybe we are. Maybe these genes are really important. And so there's many more monogamous species of birds than there are of mammals and primates. And so when I switched to studying birds, I was working with dark-eyed juncos who are socially monogamous. We can talk more about that in a minute, why I'm making that distinction. And so I was like, wow, maybe they're using these genes to choose who they're going to mate with. And I started trying to sequence these genes. And that was actually the moment when someone said to me, you know, why would you be studying that? MHC genes are detected through smell, and birds don't have a sense of smell, which is how I landed on this entire field of study.
I said that to the wrong person.
It's very interesting how one thing in life can lead us to another thing that we didn't expect.
That's the whole story of my life. I just keep following question after question.
Yeah, you're very good at admitting that. I would hope that for anybody who has a student, and you know they're already a sophomore and they haven't decided what they want to major in, that's not that unusual, and it doesn't mean that that child is not going to have success, once they do get their degree. So it's you explained that so beautifully, right down to rollerball influencing your work.
Roller derby.
Roller derby, right. That's right. That's the movie. Sorry.
There's no balls in roller derby.
Right.
Yeah, that's right. I took up officiating roller derby when I was a postdoc, after I was left my postdoc. But it was around the time I started this field of study, and it was more of a stress relief from academia. And, you know, there was actually a really cool scientific study about roller derby that was highly relevant to my interests. Somebody looked at how bacteria was exchanged between roller derby players over the course of a game. And they found that opponents became more like each other. The bacteria on their arms became more like each other over the course of a 1 hour game. So just that short period of time of interacting, it's a full contact sport. So they're touching each other. And that's how quickly our skin microbiomes can change.
It is amazing what you can learn if you're trying to learn.
Yeah, I mean, I try to be open to all these different areas of information, and I think that that's helped me enormously in life and in my research.
You talk about some of your experiences in field studies in the book, and particularly there's a story about a bear in the aviary.
Yes. That was kind of a classic moment in our field experience. So this was a study where we were trying to capture a lot of juncos, and we had this outdoor aviary. It's just a big building that was you know, had mesh on the outside, and we would put birds inside, and we would feed them. And we had caught two birds earlier in the day, put them in there with seed, and we had caught a whole bunch more birds, and we were getting them ready to put in the aviary, but we were still in the lab with them. And my my collaborator, Kim Roswell, had come back from a run and went out to the aviary to see if she could help us, but we weren't there yet. She got there. She saw two glowing eyes because it was already getting dark. And she realized it was a bear who had ripped off the side of the aviary because he smelled the food we'd put in for the birds. He didn't hurt the birds. Yeah, Kim ran away as fast as she could and came and got us, and it was just this amazingly terrifying event. It really changed our plans for the whole course of the week.
Like,
but
you're expecting when you're studying some birds.
I mean, you just, you know, nature is there. You have to be prepared and be prepared to make changes when nature has other ideas for you.
So you're listening to WBAI New York 99.5 FM and WBAI.org. And as we were saying, you can donate to get this wonderful book, The Secret Perfume of Birds, or another premium that Ecologic offers, or simply make a donation to tell us you are out there listening. We love to know who's listening. And please become an Ecologic BAI buddy. Call 212-209-2950, 212-209-2950.
And when you call them, you can tell them whether you want to be thanked on the air or not. And we will let you know. If we can't get to you this week, we'll get to you the next time we're on. But yes, we will thank you on the air, because we are very grateful to anybody who becomes a member of WBAI during Ecologic. And again, if you missed the beginning of the show, there are chapters in this book, including Following the Bird's Nose, What Does Sexy Smell Like, MHC, Magical Happiness Controller, and Girl Power. It'll take you through, you know, how does a scientist work? What do they do, and how do they do it? And what are the twists and turns and triumphs and tribulations? They're all here. You know, it's a nearly 300-page book, so you can't get it all in a one-hour radio show, so you've got to get it yourself, and I hope you're getting an idea of just how great this book is. I really can't say enough to anybody I know who, whether you like birds or wonder how do people work, you know, why do we choose the people we choose as a mate or as a friend, for that matter. I mean, the part about bacteria in our gut making us want to kiss each other, I just like, what? But I went to a micro conference in 2007, and there were a lot of people talking about how microbes in animals change the behavior of that animal. So why not people? And
you mentioned something that made me think of birding, Ken. We all know that Ken is an avid birder. An avid aviary, whatever, but you don't have to be a birder to love birds. You don't have to be a birder to research birds, because we have learned that, oh my, Danielle is not a birder. Tell us about that.
It's true. I'm not good enough to be a birder. I don't have the skills.
The two different things, a researcher and a birder, doesn't have to be the same thing.
A lot of us are not, you know, couldn't necessarily go out with binoculars and find the birds, but love to sit in the backyard and watch them. And knowing more about them and some of their behaviors, I'm going to be looking for some of the things Danielle mentioned in her book when I sit and watch. You talk about how they use their preen oil to mark scents. They spread it on twigs and so forth.
Yes, the bill wiping.
Yes.
Yeah. So, We see birds wiping their bills on branches, and that's, you know, sometimes that's just to clean their beak after they eat, but we also see them do it in social interactions, so during a fight or when they're, you know, courting a female. And I noticed this, you know, once I started really thinking about preen oil and scent, I noticed birds doing this during a totally different behavioral study. And I looked at my colleague and I was like, does anybody know why they do that? And he said, no, I've never heard of anybody studying it. So I looked it up, and there had been some studies back in especially the 50s and 60s where people had looked at it and had called it, they couldn't figure out why they were doing it, basically, I think is what was going on. And they called it a displacement behavior. So displacement behavior is when, you know, you're doing something completely irrelevant to what's happening in front of you. And it's usually because you've got some sort of feelings that you can't do anything about, like you're nervous or something like that. And so you'll see, like if somebody's talking to somebody that makes them nervous, maybe they'll shake their leg or they'll twiddle their hair or something like that. And it's an irrelevant behavior. And so the idea was that animals might do this too. And so if you see a bird bill wiping in the middle of, you know, a fight, it's sort of like a way to vent off that frustration, but it doesn't have any relevance to the fight itself. But I started looking at that and thinking, well, what if, you know, what if there's preen oil on their beaks, right? This is a waxy substance, this oil that they put it on their beaks while they're preening, and it helps them spread the oil over their feathers. But it's thick and waxy, so it probably doesn't all come off. I was thinking maybe there's a residue on their beaks. And when you think about a scented wax, like a scented candle, right, you know, you can sniff a scented candle and it's got an odor, like when you pick it up in the store, you're trying to decide when to buy it. But it doesn't really give off all of its odor until you light it, and it's that heat that melts the wax and it releases those volatile compounds, those airborne compounds that you smell. So I was thinking, what if they're rubbing their beaks on the branches, and that's actually releasing odor, and it's kind of a scent marking behavior. And so I did some studies, some behavioral studies, looking at how birds react to, how males react to a male intruder on their territory and how they react to a female on their territory. So in that way, I was able to induce aggressive behavior towards the males and courtship behavior towards the females. I found that they did it a ton when they were courting a female, and that it correlated with their courtship efforts. So the more of the other kinds of courtship behaviors they were doing, like spreading their tail feathers or singing, the more they would build.
We're running out of time.
Like it was important.
I hate giving away one of the last lines of your book, but I love the sentiment, never underestimate the power of basic science or learning for its own sake. Please elaborate on that.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, a lot of people are really into the idea of applied research, right? Like going out there and finding a cure for cancer. And they wonder why we're spending taxpayer money on these silly little things, like why, you know, how do birds smell? But the truth of the matter is we don't know what we don't know, right? It's only through this kind of basic research that we start to learn more about the world around us. And that's where we can find these new discoveries that might lead to really important applied science later. But we can't go in with the idea of, you know, finding that one answer to the question we really want, you know, for curing a disease or making a new technology without knowing what's out there. We need to know more about how the world around us works. And it leads us down pathways we never predict, which I experienced very personally.
It is amazing it's also people who research are people who think, and people who think are people who know how to apply the research once they're done, or even in the middle of it. So it does make sense if you think about it. It's just that people like to belittle pure research.
As usual, the time flies by, and we need to wrap it up. I'm sorry, but thanks for joining us. For more information, you can find Danielle Whitaker on Twitter as at JunkoStinksGo, JunkoStinksGo, or go to our website, www.ecoradio.org.
Yes, we link to Danielle's website on our website. And join us in 2 weeks on October 14th to celebrate the anniversary of the Clean Water Act, the 50th anniversary.
Yes. Our website has information on a variety of environmental topics, including Sunday's walk at Cave and Point. And birders, this is a regional treasure that really needs protection. Search for Friends of Liberty State Park for details, or just check our website. And to listen to this show again, or any of our past shows, Shaking Up FERC in Congress, International Day of Peace, Demystifying Plastics, the Fossil Fuel Nonproliferation Treaty, Rachel Carson's Birthday, Weird and Unusual Animals, Nuclear Accidents You Never Heard of, it's all at www.ecoradio.org.
That's www.ecoradio.org. We know the environment is important to you. That is why you listen to Ecologic, and we appreciate you. We need you to realize that this listener-sponsored radio station is yours. There is lots to do, and you can help. Here's a way to exert your influence on the world. Show your responsibility and love for WBAI and for Ecologic and help keep us on the air. Yes, you have that much power. We know you want to hear more about environmental news, so go to www.give2wbai.org or ecologic.wbai.org. Leave off the www, that's ecologic.wbai.org, and make your selection and pledge. Also, we would like to encourage each of you to become our buddy and a sustaining member with a recurring donation of $10 or more a month. Just go to www.give2wbai.org, go to the VAI Buddy page, and on the drop-down box, click on Ecologic and pledge a monthly amount. We really appreciate your pledge of any amount. Think of what this show is worth to you. You have our sincere thanks.
Also, for more details and advance notice of upcoming shows, those of you online, please go to www.ecoradio.org and sign up for our email list. Those of you on Facebook, please like our page, enter Eco-Logic.
Now, mainstream TV has a few good science shows, but there's not much like us on commercial radio. We pride ourselves on being different. WBAI offers unique programming, and we don't interrupt it with ads from giant corporations, which is part of the reason that you hear us asking for your support so often. We need you for WBAI and Ecologic to exist.
We continue to offer you important news, information, and entertainment. Radio might seem free, but there are costs. Like everyone, the station has rent to pay. And as an employer, we have a shoestring payroll and a call center. Our listener-supported radio station needs you.
This amazing book we've been talking about to you about today can be yours for a $45 membership donation to WBAI. Most of our premiums can be found both on their own webpage, ecologic.wbai.org, leave off the www, and on give2wbai.org. As always, you can choose from our wide variety of premiums, such as some of our Celebration of Nature shows on bees and butterflies. Go to ecologic.wbai.org and donate to the name of your favorite program, Ecologic. To become a member or contribute monthly as a BAI buddy, call 212-209-2950. That's 212-209-2950. We love to see those BAI buddies.
We'd really like you to call 212-209-2950 and say that you want to be a member or a BAI buddy in the name of your favorite radio program, Ecologic. Become a BAI buddy, donate to get the secret perfume of birds or another premium, or simply make a donation to tell us you're out there listening. We want to hear from you. Again, the number to call is 212-209-2950.
We work hard every week to bring you new information and guests who are on the front lines of many environmental issues. Most of the WBAI staff, including us, are volunteers. Pledging now during this show really helps Ecologic especially.
And secret perfume of birds are at the BAA office ready to send to you, so you'll get them very quickly, $45 donation. And our thanks to our excellent engineer, Reggie Johnson. We couldn't do this without you. I'm Ken Gale.
I'm Sally Gellert.
And I'm Donna Stein. Join us in 2 weeks on Friday, October 14th, for the 50th anniversary of the Clean Water Act.
Celebrate each day's rebirth. So
from WPFW in Washington, I'm Sue Goodwin. Here are some headlines. Hurricane Ian, now a Category 1 storm, is nearing landfall in South Carolina. The storm is currently maintaining winds of 85 miles per hour and has the potential to cause significant coastal flooding and inland flash flooding and damaging hurricane force winds. The governors of Georgia and South Carolina have declared states of emergency, but no widespread evacuation notices have been issued ahead of Ian's impact. At least 21 people died in Florida after Hurricane Ian made landfall there, Florida officials said today, warning that the number would rise. Search and rescue efforts are underway in the worst-hit areas of Florida, but assistance has been slow to reach some communities since Ian hit Florida on Wednesday as a Category 4 storm, with many roadways flooded or blocked. The House today passed legislation to fund the government and avert a partial shutdown, sending it to President Biden for his signature hours ahead of a midnight deadline. The continuing resolution extends current funding levels until December 16th, while also approving $12.4 billion in military and diplomatic spending to help Ukraine in its war against Russia. It also contains $18.8 billion for domestic disaster recovery efforts, including western wildfires, floods in Kentucky, and hurricanes in the southeast. The House vote was 230 to 201, with 10 Republicans breaking ranks to support the legislation. The president's request to include coronavirus and monkeypox funding was excluded to ensure both chambers could pass the legislation. A jury has been seated in the case of Stuart Rhodes, the leader of the far-right militia group the Oath Keepers, and four other members charged with seditious conspiracy in the January 6 attack on the Capitol. There are 12 jurors and four alternates, including 9 men and 7 women. Opening arguments in the case are expected to begin on Monday after the jurors are sworn in. The 5 defendants are charged with conspiring to oppose the lawful transfer of presidential power by force when they allegedly plan to stop Joe Biden from becoming president. They have all pleaded not guilty. Prosecutors allege the Oath Keepers coordinated quick reaction force teams in Northern Virginia so they could resupply allies busy storming the Capitol with fresh weapons or other defenses rapidly. According to the New York Times, the defendants intend to tell the jury that when armed teams of Oath Keepers made plans to rush into Washington from Virginia, they believed they would be following legal orders from the president himself. And 6 Republican-led states filed a lawsuit Thursday seeking to block President Biden's student loan forgiveness plan. Nebraska, Missouri, Arkansas, Iowa, Kansas, and South Carolina asked a federal judge to immediately block the program before the administration starts the process of canceling loan balances in the coming weeks. The Biden administration says the president has the authority to cancel debts under a 2003 law granting authority to overhaul student loan programs. Conservatives argue Biden is overreaching. The Biden plan involves cancellation of $10,000 in federal loan debt for people earning less than $125,000 per year, plus an additional $10,000 in relief for Pell Grant recipients. And in weather, in Washington, D.C., rain is expected to begin this hour and forecast to continue over the next 4 days. In New York City, rain is expected to begin overnight and likewise continue until Tuesday. From WPFW in Washington, I'm Sue Goodwin.